attitude. We are going to energise the country.
Stop Brexit.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Seamus, I'm not sure this is a great idea.
Order.
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Ellie Anderson, a member of the TUC Young Workers Forum and a regional ambassador for the Holocaust Educational Trust. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So the first thing that I'd like to ask is, as a member of the Labour Party, what was your reaction to the recent general election?
I mean, it was just utter despair. It was chaotic wherever you went with it. And I was expecting defeat. I think we were all expecting it to be a bad one. But to have it that utterly dreadful was just, it was just something else.
Do you think that the reason for the result is down to one factor, Brexit, Jeremy Corbyn, or do you think it's down to a number of factors combining at once?
It's absolutely down to a number of factors. I think, you know, I've been quite a strong and vocal critic of Corbyn over his tenure as party leader. But no, I think it was down to so, so many factors that we're only just sort of beginning to understand now. I think definitely Brexit was obviously a very, very strong component. But it was also down to the inadequacy of Corbyn. It was down to this crumbling red wall that has been crumbling for years. It was also down to voters sort of having flirted with the idea of voting for somebody else that wasn't Labour. So be it they voted UKIP, be it they voted a party in the locals or even independents in the locals, they found the opportunity and they said, fine, I will no longer be voting Labour. We lost touch with our base. So no, it's down to so many components of issues.
Now, I know that in particular, because you are from Wales, that you know about what's been happening there in terms of Labour support. What do you think has been the reaction to the Welsh Labour Party to the result of the election?
I mean, I'd be tempted to say, where is the Welsh Labour Party? Like, I thought this in the general election, the response or just the campaigning from Welsh Labour has been dreadful. Mark Drakeford, I mean, where is the leadership? How can we call him a leader in the first place? But I think now within Welsh Labour, it's a definite panic that's arising. Because we have elections around the corner that nobody is speaking about. We've got Senate elections next year, next May. I'm certainly worried that, you know, where's the vote of UKIP going to go? They got quite a good proportion of the vote in the last Senate election. So where's that going to go? Likely to the Tories. And, you know, before we know it, we could be looking at the last Labour stronghold being lost to a rainbow coalition that just don't happen to be Labour.
How much do you think of an issue Brexit has been in Wales? And do you think that now that we have left, that it will continue to be an issue? Or do you think that it's just going to not have any impact on Welsh politics going forward?
The thing is, with Brexit and the way Wales voted in the Brexit referendum in 2016, it wasn't a reflection of Brexit as a singular issue. It was a reflection of Wales being so impoverished. You know, in South Wales alone, we have some of the most, we have some of the poorest regions of Europe. So I think it was a response to people just begging for change and for begging to you know, escape from their economic sort of pitiful state that they've been placed in. Brexit and the response to Brexit was just a combination of so many failures by so many different governments. over a long, long period of time. So I think going forward, has Brexit resolved any of those? No. But Brexit wasn't the problem in the first instance. It was so many issues, and Brexit for a lot of people was seen as a way out, but those issues still arise and those issues will continue.
Now, I know you've been at some of the hostings, the leadership hostings.
I have.
What's your impression been of the different hostings that you've been to?
So I went to the first hostings in Liverpool. I wasn't really sure at that point who I was supporting. So I think my impression going out of that was I was a big supporter and I was very much taken aback by Lisa and Andy. Mm. And then the second hustings that I've been to, so I went to the JLM deputy leadership hustings on what day was it? Was it Monday or Tuesday? It's been a very long week.
Yeah, I think it was Monday.
Yeah. So no, I think having gone to that, and it was Tuesday. No, yeah. It was Tuesday. Yeah. I think having gone to that, it was very telling what the response was, and it was very interesting. Like, Raina performed very well. I'd say Rosina performed again very well. Ian Murray, thank you. I'm behind the times. Ian Murray performed well, but it was so funny because at the end, and I haven't seen many people reporting about this, that at the end of the event, Richard Bergen literally got up and ran out the room. He literally ran. I can't describe it as anything else. He ran out of that room and left that building. And I was like, you know, how pathetic can you get? Like, how is that any sort of leader in our party? It was definitely telling.
Regarding the hostings that you just described, and of course Richard Bergen's campaign, how much of a feature do you think in the debate anti-Semitism has been, and do you think that the proposals put forward by the leadership candidates and the deputy leadership candidates have been effective in addressing the concerns of the Jewish community?
I think they've all tried to address the concerns of the Jewish community. This is the leadership, not the deputy leadership. But always, whenever I think of minority and how they respond to it, I always ask them the question. And I think it's been brilliant to see JLM hosting these debates and really being quite a vocal component of what we've seen over the last few weeks. But no, I think they've all tried, some better than others. I am an Andy supporter, but I think what Lisa and Andy has done and her response to anti-Semitism was brilliant. I think Angela Rayner on Tuesday saying how if you're an anti-Semite, you don't belong in the party again, that was a brilliant reception and a brilliant response. And that should have been the hard line that we should have taken from the word go. It shouldn't be a problem in the party, and I think it's horrendous that it is. I definitely think the responses have been varied, but have on the whole been trying to resolve an issue that has been around now for as long as I've been a member.
How much do you think that education is part of the issue with anti-Semitism? Because I know that you're a regional ambassador for the Holocaust Educational Trust. Do you think that greater emphasis on educating people about anti-Semitism is going to be part of the way forward for the Labour Party?
Oh no, absolutely. I think it's going to be the way forward for society. And I went to Israel this summer and it was very, very interesting to hear, you know, these leaps and bounds that people are trying to make in trying to combat anti-Semitism. And it's down to the very word. A lot of people don't actually know what anti-Semitism means. And so there's talk amongst different communities to change the word to anti-Jewish racism, just to sort of paint it as this is what it is. It is racism. But education going forward is going to be the main component of overcoming this poison that has embedded our party. You either leave or you learn.
What do you think is going to be the greatest challenge for whoever becomes leader of the Labour Party once we know who that is at the start of April?
Well, I think the greatest challenge is going to be, first of all, re-establishing ourselves, especially post-Brexit. But another massive challenge that will arise, I think, for any of them will be, first of all, rebuilding the red wall that we lost, rebuilding our losses in Wales. It's going to have to be, you know, reaching across the breadth and depth of the country and going, you know, your home is Labour. And we have to convince people that that's the case.
What I was just going to say is that there are certain people who believe that, you know, we shouldn't chuck the baby out with the bathwater, to use a better metaphor, but that going forward in the future, the Labour Party should continue along a Corbynite path. What do you think of that?
I think, look at the election results, look at figures, look at the lack of support that we have and how, you know, how people have lost their base with Labour, and just see that Corbynism and the Corbyn project failed. It didn't work. We've lost two elections using it. I think it's time to sort of put it to bed now. I think there were some great policies. I certainly think how we've emphasised a Green New Deal and how we've emphasised the environment over the last few years, that's a brilliant policy going forward, and it's a really, really important issue. But I don't think that's attributable to the Corbyn project. I think that's attributable to Labour embracing the modern age. So I think as a whole, we should definitely put Corbynism to bed. It has failed.
To what extent do you think that the problems for the Labour Party are perhaps deeper than just Corbyn or Corbynism? Because a lot of people have pointed out that this isn't the Labour Party's second electoral defeat, it's its fourth electoral defeat. So how deep do you think the problem is?
Oh, it's so deep. It's so, so deep. I think Corbyn and this response in the 2019 election by the voter, it was the icing on top of a very, very large cake of issues that we have essentially been sweeping under the carpet for years and years and years. I think, you know, even going as back as the last Labour government, they failed to really address a lot of the problems that voters feel. But I definitely think that there is so many deep-rooted issues that go back to even pre-Thatcher that we haven't addressed as a party, and we really have to look at. We need to go, you know, this is what the voter is asking of us. You know, our allegiance and our responsibility lies with the voter. It lies with no one else but the voter, and making sure that their Britain is better for them.
How much of a problem do you think it is that the Labour Party and centre-left politics seems to have stalled somewhat? Do you think that we need a reinvigoration, sort of new third way, or do you think that do you think it would be better to adapt the ideology that we have currently, and that could then win the next election? Or what do you think? How radical do you think the change has to be?
I mean, you know, we look back at history, and, you know, you mentioned the third way. So that has been a very successful sort of way that the Labour Party went in 1997, and we saw the successes of that. But I think the Conservative Party, throughout its history, has been credited for the way that it has been able to adapt, and it has changed along with the times. And, you know, I think we really should take a bookmark out of that and go, you know, we have to adapt, we have to change. We can't look back at history for answers that are modern and they're new. So in terms of, you know, do we have to be radical? Of course we have to be radical, but we've always been radical. We have to be radical and steadfast. And we have to look back at our previous leaders. We have to look back at our previous successes and build upon them. But we should never revert. We should always progress, because the Labour Party at its core is a progressive party.
Now, as I mentioned at the start, you are a member of the TUC Young Workers Forum.
Yes.
How important do you think trade unions are to young people?
So the really unfortunate thing with trade unionism is that it's been in decline for a number of years, and the proportion and the percentage of young people being members of trade unions is the smallest it ever has been, and it's going to fall even further. But like most things, it's all about education, and it's about saying trade unionism is so important because at its core it protects you, the worker. But I feel over the last few decades, trade unionism has almost been like a dirty word. It's got a dirty name. And we really have to look at that and try and remedy it, and going, you know, go back to the base and going, look, trade unionism is about nothing else than protecting the worker and ensuring that we uphold their rights. So there is a future going forward for trade unionism if we recognise that we have to educate young people.
How much do you think that perhaps the disengagement with trade unions is to do with the way that jobs have changed over the past few decades and the way that the economy has changed over the past few decades?
I think it's certainly a factor, but I think it's less so how the economy has changed and more so how trade unionism hasn't changed with it. You know, we're looking at young people at the moment, and the majority of young people are working in the new sector. They're working in zero-hour sector. They're working in an industry that's new, and it's being regenerated so often in so many different ways. So no, I definitely think that it's less so a problem of people connecting with trade unionism and more trade unionism connecting with the people.
Now, to turn away from the Labour Party for the moment, the Conservatives have recently had a reshuffle. What are your thoughts on that reshuffle?
I mean, what a failure of a reshuffle. You know, I think it's such a failure, isn't it? I don't think it could have gone much worse for Boris Johnson. Because the coverage yesterday was not about his triumph. It was not about success. It was about Sajid Javid resigning, who was going to be sort of almost the creator of this new government. He was going to play a massive part in it. It's such a failure. I'm glad to see that changes have been made. I'm glad to see the likes of Andrea Leadsom return to the backbenchers. I just think it was a total failure.
Do you think that the appointment of Rishi Sunak as the new Chancellor of the Exchequer is going to mark a period of which the Prime Minister has even more control than he might have done if he'd had a Chancellor like Sajid Javid? Or do you think that whoever is Chancellor, Boris Johnson, would have exerted the ultimate control in the government and in Parliament?
Well, like I say, you know, Sajid Javid was going to be one of the key components of this new government. He'd already been very vocal as the new government sort of founded itself over the last month. He's very much said to Cummings, and he said no to this sort of this power dynamic. He is the Chancellor. He had one of the great offices of state, and he was going to make sure that that was a great office of state. It wasn't going to become this puppet, which I fear with the new Chancellor, it very much will be. It'll be a case of the Chancellery, carrying out anything the government wants to see.
Mm. Now, just turning back to the Labour Party for the moment. Once we have a new leader, there will be variety of challenges that they
certainly will be
that they face. And one of the things that they will need will be a strong shadow cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of people do you think should be in the next shadow cabinet? Do you have any particular people in mind that you think would compose a good shadow cabinet?
I've been thinking about this for years, since we've had such a failure of shadow cabinets. Hilary Benn needs to be in the next shadow cabinet. If we want to see success in the cabinet, or the shadow cabinet, we need Hilary Benn. We need Yvette Cooper. We need people who are skilled and who have, you know, incredible talents. Because the reality is the shadow cabinet over the last few years, there hasn't been talent. You know, there's barely talent in the new cabinet government. So no, we need talent, and this talent that has been consigned to the backbenches is one of the greatest shames of our few years of our last few years in opposition. We need that talent back. They belong on the front bench.
Would you be in favour of a return of shadow cabinet elections or not?
No, I don't think so. I think it should be up to the discretion of the leader to appoint who they choose to appoint. No, I think enough of elections for the time being. We've had too many.
So I guess that you would not perhaps be in favour of further electoral influence in terms of the way that the top of the Labour Party is governed, because a lot of people have been discussing, you know, the project of democratising the Labour Party. Mm-hmm. Where do you stand on that? How far do you think the influence of members on the leadership should go?
I mean, we've seen democratisation in the Labour Party over the last few years. It is claimed right now by the likes of Jenny Formby that the Labour Party is the most democratic it ever has been, and she's probably right. But show me if that's led to, you know, results. Has that led to good things for a party, or has it just led to failure amongst failure? You know, I think you have to be very careful when you democratise a party, and it's very good in many ways that we have democratised, you know, giving a voice to the members that the likes of Blair massively failed at. But the question is how far do you go? I mean, look at its success so far. There has been very little. And I saw, at least with North West, that without any election, without any having, you know, this one member, one vote system that has been created by the very people in charge, they decided to elect Rebecca Long Bailey and Dickie Bergen, or nominate rather. And, you know, I just think, is it successful? Has it been a success for our party? And I think looking at the results, no, it hasn't been. So I think enough of the democratisation, enough of the changing the party rules to suit an ideological wing. You know, we have to rebuild, and, you know, it can't be rebuilding through ideology. It can't be rebuilding through rule change. It has to be rebuilding through people.
How do you think that, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of factionalism in the Labour Party at the moment, mm-hmm. and there has been over the past few years, how do you think the Labour Party will be able to get beyond that factionalism?
I would quite like to see factionalism remain in the past of the Labour Party. It's incredibly unhealthy, and, you know, I do take blame in that factionism. And I think looking at it now from the perspective of being an Andy supporter, the party needs to unite. Where there is factionism, it is bad for the party. We have to understand that. You know, any factionism is bad press. And you look at the Conservatives, and they've always, always united, and they are far more successful than we are because of how united they are. So the case of factionism has to remain in the past of our history, and we need to move forward as one. And if people don't come along with us, if people choose not to be a part of that journey, then fine, we will leave them, because we need to progress, and we need to progress as one, as a party.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast. It's been great to have you on and to discuss the various goings on in the Labour Party. So thanks once again for coming on.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
And I'd like to ask you one final question. Now, Billie Eilish's theme for the new James Bond movie has been released, and it's divided opinion.
I've listened to it this morning. I wasn't such a big fan.
And what I wanted to ask was, if you could choose any artist to compose the theme for a movie about your life, who would you choose?
Without a doubt, as the whitest of girls, it would have to be Taylor Swift. she is coming to my wedding. I don't care. Like, she is a part of my life.
Well, I think that's not an answer that I didn't expect. I thought you were going to say something like that.
You know, a Fiat 500 driver, a Starbucks hot chocolate drinker. I think it's Taylor Swift.
I think it's an artist that a lot of listeners would agree with, that they would like.
I'm very glad.
So once again, thank you for coming on and speaking to me.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Thank you for being on. And if you would like to subscribe to the podcast, you can do on Spotify, Spreaker, YouTube and iTunes. If you would like to follow us, you can do at Debated Podcast on Twitter, and like us at Debated Podcast on Facebook. If you'd like to email us, you can do at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.